Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive. You know, like doing the intro, that's what it is. That's why the intro is hard, is because it's like the fakest part.
It is fake.
Yeah.
I hate doing scripted stuff.
I know, like, me
it's
too.
It's so uncomfortable.
I do like that we do it new every time, though. It's less fake that way.
That's true. It's not a recorded thing.
Yeah.
Valid. All right. How is everyone doing? Hope you guys have been well since we last saw you a week ago. How has Cassie been?
I've been okay. I've been digging out the depression pit, which is always a fun thing. Mm-hmm. It's better than falling in. So
true.
You know. Didn't watch a lot of movies in general this week. However, I did finally finish Something Very Bad Is Going to Happen, the show on Netflix that I've been watching for like 3 weeks now. Mm-hmm. It was all right.
All right?
Yeah.
That's all it gets.
Yeah.
Damn.
I really just am hung up on, I really loved the first episode into like half of the second, like the way it was set up and then where it went, I was just less interested in, and it was objectively well done. So like, sure. I'm not going to shit on it either. I just think I got excited by how I thought it was going to go. So it's on me. It's my fault because I, you know, expected one thing.
But that's so fair.
Yeah.
Because like sometimes that happens where you're like, this is going so well. This is amazing. And then it doesn't do what you wanted it to do.
Yeah.
You're just sad. In terms of horror shows, I'm watching The Midnight Club right now. I'm four episodes in. Mike Flanagan, baby. And thus far, it's 10 episodes total. I'm on episode 4. I think it's about to take a very interesting turn based on like the cliffhanger of episode 4.
Ooh.
And I'm hopeful because thus far, it's like I don't hate it or anything, but I can understand why it's the show that people say, eh.
Yeah. Does it come across more YA or does the poster just look like YA? Do you know what I mean?
It's kind of going to depend on where it goes. Mm-hmm. Because right now it feels very YA for sure. I need to see what happens next before I can like make that judgment because it could get really dark. Like the theming of the show itself is really dark. Quickly, if you don't know what it's about, it's about a bunch of kids who go to this specific hospital because they all have terminal cancers or terminal illnesses. So that in itself is dark and depressing.
Not fun.
So, you know, it kind of depends on what is done with it. But I like it so far. And I'm really excited for the next episode. Outside of that, I have in a sort of kind of way technically finished my Chucky journey. I watched Cult of Chucky. Wild film, really fun though. It was a good time. It was crazy. And then all I have now besides the show, of course, but that's like a whole thing, you know. Like that's, we'll see if I get to that, but the remake, which is obviously
that's one I've definitely not seen. I think most people haven't. I don't know how popular that was.
Well, one of the things I do know about it is that Brad Dourif does not voice Chucky.
Oh.
And it's like not connected to the other films. It's like a reboot. So I think it's really not well respected.
Yeah.
And then I think the new one that's going to be coming out, I don't know what that's going to be. Like, I think it's going to relate to the newer Chucky's. I have no idea. I don't know what they're doing. It's one of those franchises that is officially, you know, just all over the
place.
Off
the rails,
So you don't know.
Yeah.
But that's been my horror.
Okay.
Before we get into it, guys, just a reminder, we have a Patreon now. If you want to watch the video versions of these episodes, we have those over on Patreon. And we also have bonus episodes. Thus far, we have an episode about season one, so to speak, of the podcast, where we go over all of the episodes and talk about updated thoughts and such. And we'll have a new one soon, or it might be there by now.
Yes.
Who knows?
Yes. Obviously, it'll be up by the time you guys are hearing this.
Oh, okay.
So the new one. We decided to do a fun little game where we gave each other like the weirdest horror movies that we could find. We put them on a wheel and spun it. And then whatever it landed on, that's the movie each of us had to watch. And we did. And we told the other person our experience. And It was interesting.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, we will leave a little link down in the description of this episode where you can get on over there. Now, getting into today's movie, Cassie. Mm-hmm. I texted Cassie. I said, have you seen Pieces from 1982? She said, no. I said, perfect.
Oh, God.
And not because this is a good movie, but because...
Of course not.
No, I really love doing that to you. But because I watched this and I couldn't sit with it on my own, and I also was not going to have you watch it either because I'm not going to put you through that.
Wow.
So I'm going to sit here and tell you about Pieces.
Okay.
Are you ready for that?
Yeah. Do you think that I could guess where we're going based on the title?
Oh, sure.
Okay. I mean, okay. So I'm going to guess classic slasher. The MO chops their victims up into tiny little pieces.
Okay.
That's like the obvious horror mind. We could also go into like pieces of candy.
Ooh.
And true. Maybe it's like creepy candy factory.
Okay.
Actually, that should be a thing. That's my idea. No one else take it.
Okay. I was just thinking of Ice Cream Man as soon as you said that. But like,
yeah, I love a food-based horror or anything. Yeah. I like food. I like a sweet treat.
Dude, have you also been saying sweet treat lately because of Tamagotchi, or is that just me?
Oh, no. Wait, do they say it? Is that like in their original lingo?
No, it's like when you make a food in Tamagotchi, you have to categorize what kind of food it is, and one of the options
is
sweet
treat.
Yes,
it is. No, I have that lingo from my sister Grace. She refers to everything as a sweet treat. Like the last couple years, she like dinner will end and she'll be like, should we go get a sweet treat?
Oh, that's so cute. I love it.
Yeah.
But Pieces. So
okay.
It's a 1982 slasher film directed by Juan Piquer Simon and written by Dick Randall. It is a co-production between Spain, Italy, and the United States.
Wow.
In full disclosure to everybody, this film is very much labeled as an exploitation film and is criticized for its misogyny and pornographic material.
So you heard Cassie's least favorite horror subgenre is exploitation. We just had a conversation last episode about how I am starting to hate gore more than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is what we've chosen. Mm-hmm. I fear the movie that I've chosen for next week might be going into this direction as well.
Oh, good. Okay. So like we're on the same page. That's great.
Yeah.
I
can't even judge. But also it's now I'm like, okay. From here, I need to choose something different.
We need to stop with this. This is getting – it's almost like we support it, and it's getting really bad.
No, it's so bad, it's hard to look away. It's those kind of things.
No, like this – that is this movie. The most interesting piece of information on this film, and you cannot get a straight answer on exactly what's going on here, but my understanding – okay, so the movie is dubbed in English and dubbed in Spanish, but there is no such thing as the original audio of the film because it does not exist. They did not record sound on set to be used in the film, and again, this is all very alleged because nobody really knows, but the entire thing is dubbed so badly.
Oh.
Like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, am I going crazy? It looks terrible. So like what seems to be happening is that from what I've read, the actors are speaking potentially different languages or speaking languages with very heavy accents so that their lips are not matching. And only two actors, I think, dubbed their own lines and the rest were dubbed by other people.
Oh, dear. This is my worst nightmare. I hate just regular dubs. Like I'm a subs over dubs girl. So the fact that this is like bad dubbing.
Oh, it's so bad.
On top of it, when it's already like good dubs are bad to me. Mm-hmm. Like I would go, I'm shocked you could last through it.
Well, I had to Google it in the middle. I was like, oh, is this movie What's in going Spanish? On? But like I'm watching a man's lips almost match what he's saying, but just not quite.
That's
so
crazy.
So I'm like, he's speaking English. What's happening?
Yeah.
So it's very bizarre in that sense. And then also the Spanish-English production combo does lead to some really insane translations between the two versions of the film. I only know of a couple because I've only seen the English version, but people say you have to watch both because it's just so ridiculous, the translations that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And my last note before we get into the movie is this is one where you're going to have to just go in, have fun, do not think too hard, don't get caught up on anything.
Okay.
Because many people say that this movie makes no sense, and that is 1000% true.
Okay.
So you just got to accept things as they are, and it'll all be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, this is actually the very first time I ever watched a kill count. Because I needed to understand if I was stupid.
Oh my gosh.
The whole kill count, he's just like, yeah, this movie doesn't make sense. And I'm like, okay.
Not just me. Okay. I'm not going to get annoyed. I'm not going to get mad. I'm just here to laugh.
Here for the vibes. Exactly.
I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you ready? Because okay. Here we go.
Yes.
The film opens up in Boston in the year of 1942. A young boy sits on the floor in his home working on a puzzle while singing Humpty Dumpty. His mother comes in, and at first she's looking at him adoringly, you know, like, oh, look at my boy doing a puzzle. But as she inches closer, her face turns to pure disappointment. Her son is doing a puzzle of a naked woman, just like posing, you know? And this,
where did he get this? What the hell?
Well, right? Yeah, and this is like a little boy. We're talking... He's probably like 8 to 10 years old.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
And she immediately is like, where did this filth come from? And she decides that she's just going to start slapping him across the face.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, okay. She's going,
Maybe, okay.
There's a lot of good things
I'm not going to get upset. See, I'm not going to get upset. I'm not going to critique. I'm not going to get annoyed with these characters and how they handle things. So
no, you're just going to accept that that's what's happening now.
Yes, it is.
And her son is not replying as to where this came from. So she's, you know, going to go to town with the insults and the slapping. You dirty-minded little brat playing with filth, just like your father. She picks up a photo of the father and slams it into the mirror. Bastard, she yells, which is going to become a theme in this film. So get ready for that.
Interesting theme.
Yes. She tells her son that she'll kill him if she ever catches him with something like that again, and has him go get a bag so she can burn all of this stuff. While he's gone, the mother goes through the chests and drawers in the room, finding more pornographic material and ranting about how she's going to burn it all.
Uh-huh.
Well, the young boy comes back, but he didn't bring a bag. He brought an axe. So he axes his mother to death and then uses a saw to cut her into pieces.
Well, yes.
Well, yes. So you were kind of, you know.
So pretty on the nose title. Yeah.
Yes.
Can I talk now?
Oh, you can talk.
Okay. This is crazy.
Yep.
I'm over here like ready to defend this little boy. I'm like, some creep probably – well – still probably is true, but some creep gave this little boy inappropriate things. Now he's getting beat up for it. This little boy is a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is what you should be thinking. But then the movie decides to be like, actually, he's a psycho killer.
Yes.
It's like, what story are we telling here? What do you want me to think right now about this poor little boy who's now a psychotic apparently?
Right.
You can't make me sad for him and then turn him into a killer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to bring us back to about 2.5 minutes ago when I said, don't think too hard.
I'm the worst person to tell that to.
That's true. Because Cassie, she gets very intellectual about her films and she talks very smartly about things. And I just sit there and I scream at things. So like, we're different in that way.
I just, all I think about is character psychology during a movie. And you know, there's movies where that should not be happening, and I know that this is one, and I'm gonna work on it. I'm gonna work on it.
Yeah, or you can really get into it, and like I won't stop you next time.
It ends with me like cussing out the production.
You should. So yes, he saws his mother into pieces, right?
Of course.
But then he has to finish the puzzle. obviously. Okay. So he's working on his puzzle. And a little while later, a woman comes by the house. And when she gets no answer from ringing the doorbell, she calls the police. Mm-hmm. The police break down the door and make their way to the scene of the crime. The room is completely covered in blood. There's splatter everywhere.
Yeah.
Jesus, would you look at this? Something's been butchered up here, one of the officers says.
Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm. We better search the place, the other replies, right, before immediately opening the nearest closet. Inside sits the mother's head.
Okay.
Just sitting on a shelf, chilling and hanging out, you know?
I wonder why.
Yeah.
See, this is the problem with my character's psychology brain as well. Mm. You know what? No, I was saying one day I'm going to be watching Criminal Minds, and that's when my brain gets to work in a setting where it's meant to, I think.
That's so
based
true.
On the vibes I get. Because now I'm sitting here being like, why did this little boy put his mom's head in the closet, like on the shelf? Like, why did he? Why, though? Uh-huh.
But why?
I don't think we'll get the answer.
No, I think you will love Criminal Minds, though. I think that's very true. Just me pushing the show on everyone.
Yeah.
So the woman that had called the police says that, oh, that's Mrs. Rustin. And oh, dear, where is little Timmy?
Oh, my God.
Well, a small whimper comes from within another closet in the room. They open up the door to find little Timmy covered in blood. And he's crying for his mother. Where is she? Oh, no. And the police and the woman, of course, fall for this trap.
Yeah.
Cue the title card and opening credits, and then a screen saying 40 years later.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yes.
They definitely watched Halloween.
Oh, so true.
Yes. That was only like, what, a couple years before?
Yeah, I don't remember, but more or less.
Yeah.
So an individual wearing all black, gloves included, reaches into a dresser drawer and pulls out a flowery box. This box contains the outfit that the mother was wearing at the start of the film, covered in the blood, along with a picture of her, a red X across her face. Groovy music kicks in, and a girl rides her penny board down a sidewalk on a college campus.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about penny boards.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, those like had a moment. Gosh, I don't know, like 20, that feels like 2016, 2017 era.
Absolutely.
I could never.
Yeah, I don't have the balance. God. Yeah. Nope. Wouldn't even step foot on one. It would end poorly.
My friends would drag me around on it. I'd stand. Yeah, right? Oh, and longboards. Oh my gosh, longboard era. I would always stand on those and then just be pulled along with a rope.
Yeah, that's the best that you could expect from us, I think. That's fine.
Definitely.
So would you survive riding a penny board? No, I'm kidding.
On my own? Absolutely not.
And then the movie ended.
Yes.
So at the same time, there is a work truck reading Mazziello and O'Donnell Co. Glass and Mirrors. It pulls up, and two dudes start unloading a giant sheet of mirror from the back of the truck, right in the path of Pennyboard Girl. Unfortunately,
dear.
It's her first day on a pennyboard, and she has zero concept of how one may stop said pennyboard.
Right.
She starts screaming, and also, unfortunately, the two men unloading the mirror are deaf, so it's truly just such an unavoidable event when she slams right into the mirror. Man. We get a quick flashback of the mother slamming the father's photo into the mirror back in 1942.
Okay.
Now,
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what parallel that's supposed to draw. But okay.
Yeah. Now the individual in all black pulls another box out of a drawer. This one contains the nude puzzle that boy had been working on. It too is covered in blood.
Mm-hmm.
Now this individual puts together the face of the puzzle. Now let's cut away to a girl studying out on the lawn on the college campus. She's laying on her stomach with her skirt like all the way up over her butt because like obviously
that's how
what
you study.
We do. Yeah. And up in the trees, there is a man all bundled up and covered with a yellow chainsaw.
Oh.
He revs it a bit. And then the girl on the grass turns around, is all moody. Like, are you going to be long? If so, I'll move somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few minutes, a male voice responds. She goes back to studying, but then like 10 seconds later, this man comes up on her from the front, mind you, holding out the chainsaw, and he just beheads her.
No one else is around?
Nope, it just, it's like, boop, done. Just like real quick. Like no questions asked, just
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess if I saw someone like revving up a chainsaw, I'd probably just leave immediately. I wouldn't want to run away and make a scene because it's like, what if they're just trying to chop down a tree?
Right.
That would be embarrassing.
Cassie out and just running away from men chopping down trees. Like,
you know what? And I would be on that side of the spectrum than the other. Like, yes, you might catch me doing that.
And that's fine.
No, but I'd be fast walking away for sure.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think I'd see them walk up to me with a chainsaw as well.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
First of all, that's one of my least favorite sounds in the world is like revving chainsaws and leaf blowers. Like it induces so much anxiety in me. Just like the I can't do it.
I understand that.
Oh, it's genuinely triggering. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
I would probably like chill with the guy being there. But like as soon as he starts walking in front of me holding out a chainsaw, I might be like, whoa, what are you doing?
I wouldn't even leave too because of being scared. I'd leave because like this is annoying. So I'm just going to go find a new spot to be.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah.
Now that body must have been discovered because we cut right to the lieutenant. Lieutenant Bracken is his name. And he's arriving to meet with the dean of the school. Now, fun fact, Lieutenant Bracken is played by the coach from Graduation Day. If you remember,
Coach George Michaels.
Yes, it's the same guy. Bracken has also brought along Sergeant Holden, and they all shuffle into the dean's office. We'll come back to them in a bit, but first, we gotta check in with some students sharing a joint in the hallway.
Okay.
They're talking about how they've just installed a waterbed in the training room.
Training room?
I don't think that's what you use for training, but...
No, why would you...
Yeah, I don't
know. I'm curious about this. Have you ever gotten to experience a waterbed?
I have not. Have you?
It's odd. Yeah.
I can't imagine it's comfortable.
No. My cousin's mom, when I was young, had a waterbed. And it was like fun. But then we would get yelled at because she's like, you're going to pop it, you know?
Right.
Which like why? I just don't understand why you would want a bed that could be popped. You know what I mean? I'd be stressed. And the upkeep, it's odd.
And also like I don't think it's comfortable.
Well, I think it's like less about comfortability. I think people were sold that it's like just good for your joints and your back and like it's good for back pain and stuff, but which it definitely isn't.
Yeah.
I don't think.
It sounds like a gimmick, but who knows? Maybe we've had it all wrong and they're supposed to be in the training room.
Exactly.
Just, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah.
So one of the girls is like, have you ever been laid on a waterbed? And another responds saying, the most beautiful thing in the world is smoking pot and fucking on a waterbed at the same time.
Wow. This feels very 70s. You know, they're still living in the 70s.
It feels like something, for sure. This is one of the spots where they suspect there might have been a mistranslation.
Oh, no.
Because it's just like, what is that?
Especially the training room. Maybe that's a mistranslation.
I don't think it is. I don't know what happened here. Listen, this movie doesn't make an ounce of sense. So,
that's
like,
so
we accept it, but at the same time, what is
What's trying to be said right now?
Yeah. What are you going for?
Huh.
Well, like, it's not about to get any better. So, like, I don't know why I'm acting like it's that weird. So, they're all giggling and tee-heeing, right?
Yeah.
And a professor, Arthur Brown of anatomy, he emerges from his classroom. The group of students takes notice, and the girl who loves smoking pot and fucking on waterbeds is like, watch this. And she walks over to the professor. Can I ask you something? She says, what are the pectorals? My friends all laugh at me. They say mine are funny.
Oh.
And the professor glances down at her breasts and goes, I assure you, you have nothing to worry about.
Oh. I thought he was going to be like, this is so awkward.
But, no.
I guess not.
He's, like, not super creep. Like, I know I just said it super creep, but, like, he's not.
Okay.
He's not as weird as – she's weird, quite frankly, for this.
Sure.
Because then she goes, thank you, sir, but where are they?
Oh, my God.
And so he gestures to his own pectorals.
Yeah.
And the group of students all laugh, so he walks away.
Okay.
And, like, that's that scene. So – that happened.
I just wonder like how people became writers back in the day.
Oh, I know.
Like how they were like allowed in the writer's room to make movies.
It's like what was that?
It really baffles me.
It should. It really should. So he walks away and he goes over to the secretary's office. And the secretary, I think her name is Grace. I might have made that up, but mm-hmm. it's not important. She's immediately ready to gossip. The police are here now and they think that the killer could be someone on the staff. And Professor Brown is like, he's sat for the tea. He's like, what makes them think that?
Yeah.
Well, the lieutenant said it looks like an inside job. And it's like, girl, that's not a reason. Like, that's just you reiterating why? What you said 2 seconds ago. But okay.
Yes.
Well, apparently Willard, the gardener, was the one who found the body. And they still have not recovered the head. The head is still missing.
Of course.
Right. Wonder what the murderer wanted with it, she ponders. Just then, the dean buzzes into the secretary and is like, can you find me Professor Brown? And she's like, oh my God, no IT. He's right here. So the dean asks him to join the little group meeting in his office.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the dean knows that the murdered girl was in Professor Brown's classes. So the lieutenant and sergeant wanted to ask him some questions about her. So why doesn't he just show them around campus while he answers their questions? Before they head out, the dean tells the officers that they can come back to him with any more questions they may have. Oh, and also, can we keep this quiet so as to avoid bad press for the school? And the lieutenant's like, well, honestly, the press won't help us either, so that sounds great. We're just going to tell nobody about this.
Right. We wouldn't want anyone to know that they should be vigilant at the moment.
No, no.
I don't think anyone needs a warning about someone beheading people around here.
Just keep that on the down low.
Yeah.
So anyway, Professor Brown shows the officers to his classroom where he tells them that he didn't know the student very well. He shows off a skull that he has on his desk saying it was a present from one of his students and he doesn't know where he got it. Teehee.
That's nice.
Yeah. So the lieutenant's like, wow, I'd love to meet the student who gave you that. But no, that was back in the 60s. So like he's long gone. No big deal.
Right.
But Professor Brown is surprised to hear they even suspect the murderer could be another student. But the officers say it's very possible. Anyway, quick cut to the yellow chainsaw revving as it cuts down some branches.
Mm.
The gardener Willard is holding it and he's working out on the grounds when the dean walks up. When do you expect your work will be finished here with us on campus? He asks. Willard says maybe a week or two, but not to worry. He's getting paid by the job, not by the hour. He'll be as quick as he can. Good, good, the dean says, walking away. Willard eyes him suspiciously. Willard then takes a few steps.
This feels like the kind of movie where, like, everyone ends every conversation with, like, an eyebrow up eyeing someone suspiciously.
No, wait, that's so real, actually. Yeah. And also, Willard is got this sus look on his face the whole movie. He's constantly, like, squinting one eye and, like, smirking, and it's like,
okay.
You good, bro? Willard then takes a few steps the other way and spots a couple making out under a tree. But we cut away.
Okay.
We cut to the black glove.
Like, why?
Why? It's so funny because I just was like, do I write this? I'm like, yes, because this is the energy of the movie. You have to write everything down.
No, that's so funny. Imagine if you, when we write scripts, sometimes things get cut because it's like, okay, this this doesn't matter. But when the whole movie doesn't matter, it makes me wonder like what would have been left of this movie if you decided to just cut anything that didn't.
Right. No, I had to be like, no, you have to keep that in. Because it was in the vision, you know what I mean? Yeah. Somehow. Well, we're going to cut back to the black-gloved hand, putting together the torso/boob section of the nude puzzle.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Very important insert. Over in the library, a girl tosses a note to a guy that says, I want to do it underwater. See you in the pool.
No.
Like girls do.
I don't think that appeals to me. No, I never really got that. You know, it's like hot tub. Like, you know, this people's fantasies and movies and everything. I'm just like, I don't really get it. But you know what?
No.
Get it, girl. You know what?
Good
what I mean?
For you.
Good for you. Yeah.
Good for you.
You'll probably die.
Well.
While doing it in the water. That's my guess.
That would have been... Well, we'll get there. So
okay.
This guy looks real pleased by this note as Girly Pop packs up her stuff and she heads out. Now, this guy, who does have a name, it's Kendall. He motions to her that he'll be there in just a minute. And then he turns to toss the note in the trash. and he misses the trash and overwalks the individual in all black straight up in the middle of the library and like picks up the note and reads it. We don't see his face or anything, but like, yeah. Oh no, he read the note.
Yeah.
Our girly pop, Jenny, she's going to make her way into the pool room to some very like saucy music. It's like, you know what I mean? And she stands in front of the giant ass window and starts to undress down to her bathing suit.
Actually, women can only undress in front of big windows.
Well, exactly. I'm glad you're on the same page here.
Yeah.
Now, sneakily, the figure in all black comes in and he hides in the shadows. And I'm going to steal something from Deadbeat here because they say, and it's perfect. It's a perfect description. Uh-huh. The silhouette of this guy looks like Neighborhood Watchman. You know, like the Neighborhood Watchman, like with the hat?
Oh, Yes.
That's exactly what it looks like. Just okay. Like lurking in the shadows. Sure. It's crazy. Oh, and then Jenny whips off her bathing suit top and dives into the pool because like, why would you need that? Like, yes. That's so silly. The Mr. Figure guy crouches over to the pool skimmer and grabs it. While Jenny's preoccupied, swimming laps and diving beneath the water, the man sneaks up on her and places the skimmer over her head.
Oh,
Jenny screams and struggles, but how could you ever escape a pool skimmer? Am I right? Like, that would be so difficult, right?
It's
so,
as if you, like, couldn't just swim underwater.
No, like, she's so in there and just like, could she do?
Poor girl.
Yeah, the killer drags her across the pool over to the ledge, right? And he fishes her out of the water and lays her on the ground. And I guess Jenny's just, oh my gosh, she's just too out of it. Because the killer, like, goes to the corner of the room to get the chainsaw. He's revving it and all this shit. And she's just laying there like, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he comes over and swings the chainsaw. Girlie screams and we cut away.
Okay.
Now, some other kid comes into the library looking for Kendall, who is still just looking at books. He's no rush, I guess, to go see Jenny at all. So this kid, Myron, he goes to Kendall and hands him a note from the dean's office. He says he spent a whole half an hour looking for him. Kendall seems disappointed and concerned by what he reads on this note. Back to the killer, who's dragging a bloody bag into his home.
Now, oh my gosh, he already left.
He's like gone.
Wow.
And Kendall's still just reading some books in the library. Like, it's fine. So the killer's got a full-blown walk-in freezer in his house. Good for him. That's cool. And he goes inside where we see the head of the first girl he killed. Mm. And now he's dropping off whatever is in this bloody bag.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing we know, Willard is walking into the pool room at the school. And when he flips on the lights, he sees the bloody chainsaw sitting on the windowsill. And also Kendall is now hiding in the corner.
Okay.
But Kendall's the one who gets spooked and runs out of the room. And Willard looks around and sees Jenny's body laying next to the pool, but it's completely chopped up and the torso seems to be missing now. So Willard has a very like even demeanor. He's not like scared. He's just like, oh, weird.
You know? Oh, that is weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he goes to leave the room and runs straight into the officers who he starts fighting. He just starts, oh, blah, blah. And it's this hand-to-hand combat between Willard, three officers, and Kendall is also there. But then one of the cops pulls out a gun and tells Willard he'll blow his brains out if he doesn't stop.
Okay.
So he stops.
Oh, good.
Yes. Sometime later, we have like full-blown crime scene stuff going on. The body parts, they're covered up in some plastic. Someone's photographing stuff. You know the vibes.
Mm-hmm.
And Professor Brown comes in. I guess the lieutenant asked him to come because he didn't want to wait for the coroner's opinion. So he's like, Professor Brown, can you come give your opinion? He gestures to the body parts. And is like, could that have been done with a chainsaw?
Oh, and that's Professor- a crazy pull. Like, good on him.
Yeah. Professor Brown looks at the body for 2 seconds and is basically like, well, duh.
Oh, good. I thought they were going to be like, wow, you think?
Well, he does kind of play. Like, he's like, I'm no expert, but even a layman could know that this was done with a chainsaw.
No. It's like, okay. Anyone could know, guys. Anyone.
Anyone would know. So he also then like goes and puts his hands on like the handle of the chainsaw.
Oh,
Professor Brown and Lieutenant's all, don't touch that. You've destroyed the evidence.
Right.
I don't know what we're doing here, but none of us are professionals. So yeah. The lieutenant and the sergeant make their way to the dean's office because they got a chat. But on the way there, they decide they need to get someone in here undercover. A woman, because that's what the killer's after. Now,
oh, yeah, sure.
Right.
Bait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They bring up this idea to the dean, who doesn't seem super keen on having spies on campus, but ultimately agrees. If they want to catch the killer, they're going to have to do something. The lieutenant then asks to see the two boys, and we cut to Myron and Kendall, who are on their way to the dean's office. And Kendall's like, "Hey, Myron, don't tell them it took you a half hour to find me, okay?" Myron says he doesn't think Kendall did it, but where the hell was he all that time? Mm. You know Alicia, the blonde in anthropology? Myron's like, "Her too?" And Kendall's all proud and Myron's impressed. Like, how does he do it? He was just hooking up with another girl in the meantime.
Okay.
Anyway, they make it to the office where we now have the two officers, the dean, secretary, Myron and Kendall. Mm-hmm. And the dean is just trying to get the story straight. Mm-hmm. A note was left with the secretary for Kendall. She had the note delivered to him. The note was clearly sent by the killer to keep Kendall away from the pool, which, by the way, we like never get to see what's on this note.
Oh my God. So, like, yeah. Why? There's so much emphasis on it.
Yes. But apparently it was meant to keep Kendall away from the pool, which he managed to do on his own anyway. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he did get the letter, he got like suspicious of it. So he went to the pool anyway. Well, everything here seems in order. So I guess meeting adjourned. Let's do aerobics.
Oh.
So in a dance room.
What?
What?
Wait, they didn't shout that, right? That's just your transition.
I wish they had.
Everything's done here, guys. Let's do aerobics. Oh my God. That scared me. But I was like, I could see it.
I could see this.
This is the kind of movie. Okay, okay. Anyways, yes. So cutting to aerobics.
In a dance room, a group of girlies in leotards are doing aerobics together while the killer watches very breathily from a window nearby. They reach a break, and one of the girls says she's got to run to the John, so she dances her way down the stairwell to use the toilet. Mm-hmm. The killer follows her. Mm-hmm. She goes to open the door to the bathroom and gets jump scared by another aerobics girly who opens the door from within at the same time. The two of them head back into the bathroom. This is your first check-in.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Is that the end of that scene?
Yep.
That's been happening a lot where you like... I'm like, oh, we're getting into the scene. And then it just ends and we're moving on to something else.
Yep.
Wow.
Isn't this such a good movie?
This is so good. I can't believe I've never heard of it before.
I know.
Yeah. It's,
you know.
Where did you find this one?
On Shudder.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy too because Shudder's like system for ratings.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this movie has a good rating on Shudder. If it has a good rating on Shudder, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
If it has a bad rating on Shudder, please do not click on it. Because I can't even
imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also, like, this is, like, a weird time maybe to bring this up. I've seen some, like, behind-the-scenes stuff for this film. And, like, the set wasn't great.
I can't imagine.
Apparently the pool scene was supposed to be longer, but there's this behind the scenes clip of the director talking about it where he's like, "Oh, but like the water was freezing. Yeah, she almost died." But like he says it so casually and it's like
okay. Yeah, we had to cut this one scene because he accidentally did chop someone's head off, but
yeah. It's disappointing.
We are going to give $5 to the family, so it's okay.
$5.
Yeah.
Here you go. Crisp $5. Anyway, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
The questions for this film do vary a little.
Okay.
In the way in which they are presented. So do you hear the chainsaw approaching you and move?
Yeah, I'm going to go 99 here. Well, 99. Okay. Am I being ridiculous with that?
I went 87.
I'm going to bring it down to a 95, actually.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah.
Totally fair.
Just because, like, I'm already just annoyed as soon as I hear it. So, like, I'm leaving anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm ridiculously paranoid all the time. So even if I'm like, he's probably not going to kill me. I'm still going to be, like, looking over my shoulder. Even if I'm just annoyed at the sound and moving because of that.
Yes.
I just, yeah.
Entirely valid. Do you save doing it underwater for any time other than now in the school pool?
Okay, so the thing is, I would, like, if I am offering that to a man and he doesn't immediately follow after me. He's like, I'm gonna chill here for a second. I'll meet you there. But like, okay, well, you don't fucking want it then. then yeah. You think I'm gonna wait? You. I'm gonna wait for you. So I wouldn't like go off into the room getting ready by myself. Like, no. So that means I want to go. I'll go 99.
I went 99 on this one as well.
Yeah.
One, not really interested. Two, the school pool. Like,
that's gross. Like, a public pool of any kind is gross. Like, water things, stuff isn't for me. Public pool, no.
There's just everything about it.
And then you're just going to stay here and let me go off and get ready for you? Absolutely not.
Yeah. So those are your two questions.
Okay, beautiful. So I am starting off with a 97%.
Yay! I have a 93. We're doing
I like
fantastically.
This. And I'm going to be upset if we somehow get dragged down to a really low score for this movie.
I wouldn't blame you for feeling that way.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. So over at the station, there's this guy named Dr. Jennings, and he wants to meet with Kendall, of all people, to help him with his psychological profile of the killer.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought he was just like, okay, I misunderstood. I thought that Kendall needed to be psychologically evaluated, and this was just a normal thing that they did with kids at this campus.
No. But Dr. Jennings thinks that it's possible Kendall could know the killer.
Oh, by the way, I have to tell you, I do have a guess.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the teacher that was being asked questions about pecs.
Oh, okay.
What's his name?
Really funny that you went with that. As all of the examples. Professor Arthur Brown.
Brown.
Is his name.
Yes. Okay. I'm putting a star next to him. I'm sus.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I guess this is a good time to say, too, that one of the parts of this film that makes it so ridiculous is that the police force just, like, let this kid be a part of everything. He's just, like, a random college student. And they're like, Kendall, what do you think? And it's like, Kendall?
Yeah.
Kendall doesn't know shit. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, dear.
Well, the lieutenant, he's out in the bullpen talking to a woman who seems to have just agreed to some dangerous job. She'll do anything to get out of the office. Kendall walks out after he's finished his meeting with Jennings, and he stops when he sees this woman. Hey, aren't you Mary Riggs? He asks. Well, yes, it's Mary Riggs, the professional tennis player.
What? Is this this is like not real. They're not like ripping off a real famous tennis player. It's just a random famous tennis player in this universe.
Yep.
Okay. What is she doing here?
Kendall is like, what is she doing here? That's what I wrote down. Well, she works here, obviously, and she's going to be the one to go undercover at the university as a tennis coach.
They hired a professional woman's tennis player to go undercover for their investigation.
Okay, like, it's not even that, though, because, like, she does work at the police station.
What?
Yes!
Why?
I don't know why.
Is she retired from tennis?
Maybe. But even then, like, why is she?
What a pipeline.
It's
the pro tennis player to police officer pipeline went crazy in 1982, I guess.
To undercover tennis coach. To undercover. It's like, okay.
What a life. Wow.
Yeah. So Kendall's all like, whoa, cool. Thanks for trusting me and letting me in on this. The lieutenant then pulls him aside and goes, look, kid, all you got to do is keep your eyes open and watch out for Mary in case she needs any help. Like, yeah, let's have the child look out for the grown woman.
Police. We should put that responsibility on him. Yeah,
exactly. Like, this checks out. So Kendall leaves, and then this news reporter shows up acting as news reporters do, demanding to speak with the lieutenant. Some officer's trying to tell her that he's busy, but the lieutenant comes out anyway and is like, what is going on out here? Girlie immediately introduces herself as Sylvia Costa of the Boston Globe, and she wants to know what is going on here at this university. Now, remember, we're trying to keep this hush-hush, so the lieutenant plays dumb and he pretends he has no idea what she's talking about. Either sometime later or another day, Mary is now undercover at the university playing tennis with a student.
I really like Mary, though.
Yeah.
I have no reason to. I just think she's such a wild character that I don't want her to die, and I fear she is.
Like, what an icon, right?
I know, like, yeah.
I agree with you. A ton of people are watching this match, and it's honestly pretty pathetic. Fun fact, when they were casting the film, somebody told the director that everyone in California knows how to play tennis, so he didn't bother to check if they knew how to play tennis.
Oh, dear. So how does the pro tennis player look in this scene?
She looks so good at tennis. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, God.
But she does win. And then the dean comes over to chat with her just about what she's doing, you know, how her undercover mission is going. Mm-hmm. And he asks about Willard. And Mary says they're going to have to let him go, like, in terms of they had arrested him. Mm. But they don't have any evidence that he actually killed the girl in the pool. So he's going to have to be set free. Now, while they're chatting, Sylvia shows up, the news reporter, and she interrupts, asking to talk to the dean about what's been happening on campus. And again, now the dean plays dumb, but Sylvia's not buying it. She's definitely sus.
Okay.
Let's get another scene with our puzzle master figure in all black, who pulls out the puzzle and now adds the arms of the figure.
Yes.
So remember aerobics class earlier? Like, let's go.
How could I forget?
Let's go back to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except that everybody has left now, except that one girlie who went to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
I keep bringing up fun facts that I shouldn't, but also the director wanted the women to be wearing no clothing in this scene, and they said no.
Why the hell?
Yeah. Yep.
Would the women
yep.
be naked at their yep. aerobics class?
Literally.
Did he mean literally? Does he mean that, like, down to, like, no bra, no underwear?
So he said he wanted them to be wearing very little clothing.
Okay.
But
it still doesn't make sense, but it's like,
yeah, they were like, no, we're going to wear leotards like we would if we were at aerobics.
Yeah. 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 Thank you, women.
Exactly. So girlie is dancing on her own in the room, doing her own little routine. And yes, of course, the killer is watching her again from the window mm-hmm. in the door. After a little while, she decides, oh, she's had enough for today. She turns off her music and starts to put her clothes on. She hears a noise while she's getting ready to go, and it does spook her a little bit. So she speeds up her process. Heading out the door, the killer follows her. She starts running, and the killers walk in like Michael Myers, slow yes. after her, right? And she runs all the way down multiple hallways before making it to the elevator. When she gets there, a man in black is already waiting there, having just pressed the button. And she jumps back like, ah. But then when she sees his face, she says, oh, sorry, sir. You scared me. Interesting.
Ah. Okay. Wait, we're supposed to take that is him. And now she recognizes him and she's not scared. So it must be someone familiar.
Yeah. I mean.
But now he's not going to go. He's not trying to kill her.
Well, if you had any doubt about it, just give me 15 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. The two of them get in the elevator, and the elevator starts to rise before the man presses a button to make it stop.
Yeah.
What are you doing? The girl asks before the killer whips out his chainsaw from behind his back.
Okay. Wow. Didn't see that there.
Nah, it's so hidden. But she starts screaming, and the killer saws her arm off. Yes, that's so nice of him. Yeah. So Kendall and some officers are nearby, and they hear the screaming. But by the time they make it to the elevator, the killer is gone.
Mm-hmm.
On the floor of the elevator is the girl's body, and both of her arms are missing. One of the cops just turns around and vomits, so thanks for that.
Mm.
But anyway, the murder gets called in, and everyone shows up. The lieutenant walks up and is like, all right, what happened? That's a real quote. And Kendall goes, well, we scared him off, but the girl's still alive, so we can finally get this bastard. And they make a fucking big deal out of her being alive just for a doctor to walk by immediately after and be like, oh, no, she died. Like what was all of that?
Why are you wasting screen time?
Like, what was that? That one bothered me. That one bothered me more than anything else. I'm like, why did we just have a whole thing about, oh, we're going to talk to her?
Yeah.
He's all like, I want her guarded at all times. And the doctor's like, oh, no, I did everything I could. She's dead.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So anyway, then Professor Brown walks in. And the lieutenant asks him where he just came from.
Okay.
I was upstairs in the library, he says. Good, the lieutenant responds. I'll be talking to you later. And then he just like walks away with his posse. So he instructs the sergeant to run a full background check on everyone on the staff. Use the full budget if you have to. And the sergeant's like, hell yeah, that sounds like a good time. Then we cut to Kendall having sex with some other random girl on campus. Oh, and girlie, she's so loud.
Yeah. Like, he's definitely just the best she's ever had. She can't even take it.
Exactly. Kendall is like telling her, oh my God, you need to be quiet. Shh, we're going to wake people up. But she can't help herself. She's just like moaning his name like crazy. Well, Kendall gets out of bed to look out the window for some reason, right? And it is worth noting that we do get like full penis. So I guess the movie set equality in that regard.
I appreciate that.
I do appreciate it, but also like that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you can keep that. So out the window, Kendall can see Mary walking on her own in the dark. Meanwhile, the girl in bed is begging for Kendall to come back. Like, she really just needs him so bad. But Kendall puts on his clothes because he has to go save the defenseless police officer, right? Well, out with Mary, we can see that someone with a chainsaw is creeping up on her in the dark. She walks along this building with her flashlight, constantly looking over her shoulder. She's scared of being alone. And suddenly, Bruce Lee jumps out from around the corner and karate chops the flashlight out of her hands.
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee, with one E though. Not two E's, just one. Bruce Lee. I'm not joking. That's like a genuine, honest to God thing that just happened. And his name is Bruce Lee. Yeah, so I'll keep going. And then okay. So he keeps approaching her and he's sending out karate kicks at her. And then Mary pulls out her gun. But he karate chops that out of her hands too. And he keeps going at her without like actually making any contact. And then he's like jumping at her.
Just imagining him, you know, like one of those insects that just like hops around their food.
It's just Bruce Lee. Well, yeah. So he's jumping at her and then she falls to the ground. So she sends a kick into his crotch. Bruce Lee falls to the ground as Kendall rolls up on his motorcycle. And Mary's like, look, it's the killer. He jumped me. And Bruce Lee gets up.
He's like, I'm just Bruce Lee. I'm the killer.
Kendall laughs and goes, oh, hey, it's my kung fu professor.
Professor just attacks people at random around the campus?
Well, obviously.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, like, he's gonna go now. So he just leaves. No, he literally just walks away.
Is Mary okay?
Yeah, Mary's fine. No, it's not even, like, first of all, apparently this guy was, like, a Bruce Lee impersonator, and he just, like, happened to be around. So they were like, oh, you want to be in the movie? And so they wrote this fucking scene.
Wow.
That makes no sense. And it's great.
Wow.
But he leaves and Kendall's like, okay, you're safe now. See you later. Which, by the way, I thought you were like here to help her. And now you're just like, bye. And Mary's like, no. Like, I'm going to go with you. But first, we need to look for my gun.
Right.
She looks down on the ground next to her feet, picks up her gun, hops on the back of the motorcycle, and they ride away.
What if she just shot Bruce Lee in the head and he was like, that's my kung fu professor.
Oh, shit. What have we done? My God. But yeah, that's been fun. So
that was great. That was my favorite part so far.
It should be. No, this, I was like kind of falling asleep and then this happened and I was like,
I'm awake.
What? What just happened? So Sylvia then suddenly appears from behind the corner and she's trying to get into the school building like in the middle of the night. So she's lurking around looking for a way in and we can see that the chainsaw killer is watching from nearby. Mm. Sylvia finds an open door and lets herself inside. The killer follows close behind. Sylvia wanders the school looking for, honestly, I don't know what, but she eventually makes it to the training room.
Oh,
would you look at that? Suddenly, some bright lights just flash, and then the door slams shut, and then the killer enters from another doorway. I don't know what all the fanatic stuff was, but
this happened. Is so relatable. Like, there's so many moments in movies where I'm like, what even just happened? Like, how do I explain?
I couldn't tell you.
I get the vibe, though, and that's all that matters just for these moments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Sylvia tries to run, but there's nowhere for her to go. Mm. The killer grabs at her, and she falls back on to the waterbed. Oh, there it is. Look at it. That's why it's in the training room. Okay. Yes. The killer opts for a knife this time around, repeatedly stabbing Sylvia in the chest. The waterbed, of course, breaks and the water dyes red. It's a very messy scene. Sylvia flips over and the final stab is delivered to the back of her head. Super fun fact about this. I noticed it before I watched any behind the scenes.
Oh.
The stab to the back of the head. It's a cardboard knife and you fully see it like bend when it hits the head. And the shot just stays there for like way too long. And you're like, that's a cardboard knife. Just resting on the back of her neck.
You know
right
what?
Now.
I'm happy to hear it because I was afraid you were going to be like, it actually like knocked her out. Like they,
right?
Because I'm scared about like the safety precautions on this set.
No, it's a cardboard knife, but the neck shot like shows the knife protruding from her mouth. So,
right.
Like, of course. So RIP Sylvia.
Man, I think it's really funny that this movie felt like they needed to explain there being a waterbed in the training room. Like they needed to give us the heads up so that it would make sense later.
Mm-hmm. Even though it doesn't.
But it just doesn't.
Nope.
It's odd. Yeah.
It's very odd. Yeah. I was really confused and then that happened and I went, oh.
Like, okay. That's why you mentioned it before.
Sure.
With the vibe that this movie has, it would make more sense for there just to be a waterbed in any room at any time.
Yep.
Without question. Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So Kendall is dropping off Mary at her apartment, and she thanks him with a kiss on the cheek.
That's odd.
Yeah, it's odd. And she's about to close the door when Kendall's like, wait, aren't you making coffee?
I just got home. I'm going to
Literally,
bed.
Literally, she's like, another time. She laughs and then kisses him on the lips, though.
What?
Yeah.
What kind of kiss? Like a sweet one?
Like a little sweet peck.
That's so weird.
Yeah, it's strange. I don't like it.
Was there like energy set up between them at all until this moment?
A little bit, but it's always been weird because like there's an age gap.
Yeah.
It's obviously like he's in college and whatever, but still it's like still not. Good.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and in the most random moment of the movie, believe it or not.
What? What are you about to say? Bruce Lee just karate chopped a professional tennis player cosplaying undercover. And we're about to now get to the most random moment?
Well, so Kendall like turns around to leave and Myron jumps out at him with like a scary mask on. He pulls the mask up, blows on a party popper, and screams Casanova, and then runs away. That's it. And this is our act two check-in. So
why is he following him around?
Why is he here? Why is he wearing a mask?
Why does he have a party popper?
And why did he scream Casanova?
Why did he run away?
And why did he run away?
The running away is the worst part. It's like, from there, you'd expect like, what the hell, dude? You've been following me around. He's like, and he could be like, I knew you were into her. I saw you guys walking away. And then, you know, something. But the fact that he just runs away.
Yep.
What is Kendall's reaction?
I don't even know if we see it.
Okay.
Like, I don't even remember if we cut back to him.
Okay.
Because, that's the second act.
Here we are.
We're here. It's a movie that exists.
Well, right?
A movie. I do have two questions for you.
Okay.
How unlikely are you to be doing late night aerobics by yourself at the school?
Oh, yeah. I'd be too scared for that. Like, just even aerobics. In college, I probably would have done, like, some fun workout classes with friends. But not by myself. I'm going to say 99.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I went 94, so I'm right behind you.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do that, I'll do it in my house / dorm room / whatever it is.
Yep. That's not something you need to do by yourself at night in a professional setting.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. As a reporter, do you avoid sneaking into the school at night?
Oh, okay. See, the hard thing about this is we don't even really know what she was trying to do here.
That is true. I don't know what she was looking for. Like, she just wants information. But
as a reporter, honestly, I wouldn't do that without reason. Like, I wouldn't break in and, like, be spooky, spook, sneaky, sneak without a very specific driving reason. Like, I need to get this paper from this teacher's desk. You know what I mean? So I'm going to say unlikely, but, like, I don't know.
Right.
So I'm going to go with like an 82.
Okay. No, that's up to this point. This is also my lowest score. I did 56 though, just because I mean, like I have my own issues with reporters as it is.
Sure.
I get they're doing a job, but sometimes my Lord, calm down. But if I was a reporter, like I get it. Like, oh, you got to do what you got to do to like get the story.
Right.
And also like, I love sneaky sneak stuff. It's so fun.
Because I would be like, being a reporter, you know there's like a killer on the loose. I don't want to be alone at night with a killer on the loose.
I'm not saying you're wrong. No, like, you know what I mean? You're right. But like, that sounds fun. Oh my God. Do you remember ever being in your school after hours when you were younger?
Yeah, I was a janitor.
You were what?
I was a janitor. Custodian?
You were a custodian?
Yeah. It was so fun. It was the most fun job ever. When I was in like still in high school.
Oh, I didn't know.
Like
you did
all
that.
All of the custodians were basically just all high school staff. So it was just me and my friends.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
And it was the best. And it was so fun. And one of the elementary schools haunted. So that was fun. Obviously, my boss did see a ghost in the art room.
Nice.
So we always all did the art room together.
Oh, cute. No, that's so fun.
Yeah. But the vibes were fun.
Yeah, I always loved being in school after hours because it was just like empty and you just be like running around the hallways acting like an idiot and whatever. It's a good time. It's a good time. So like,
I get caught dancing with my vacuum.
How was that?
Again, by my boss. It was funny.
Good, because I times. Would never, like for me, oh my God, I think I would have died. Just because that's the kind of stuff that like, oh my God. Ain't no way.
That was a good time. One time, sorry. I mean, now I'm getting janitor stories. One time, someone like on another high school staff member on the whatever, they found a Christmas tree in the dumpster outside.
Oh.
I forget why or where it came from, but it was like a little Christmas tree. And it was like the start of December. So they were like, they brought it in and they put it in like the office space that we like check in and the break room space.
Okay.
So they set up a Christmas tree and they were like, that's weird. And so then our bosses showed up and they had no idea where this Christmas tree came from.
Right.
Like, what the heck? So then they thought that I did it because it just is giving my energy, but I did not.
Just giving Cassie Garmadisco.
But I did not do it. But now get this. I show up for my shift. I walk into the break room, check-in room. I see a Christmas tree, and the only decoration on it is my school picture from 5K.
Oh!
My 5K yearbook picture
is sitting
lonesome in the Christmas tree. And I'm like, hey, so what's going on here? What's this?
Hello?
And they're like, we know what you did. And I was like, what are you talking
about? Huh?
Yeah, so
that's crazy.
I was like, that wasn't me. It was actually someone else. I believe his name was Ryan. And they're like, so then they like took my picture off. And why did they have it? Because my grandpa was the maintenance. He was like in charge. So they like got it from his desk. And because I was 17 and he still had my 5K picture on his desk.
Well, yes, of course.
So that was quite a day. I highly recommend being a custodian with your friends at your high school.
That sounds kind of fun.
It
sounds like a vibey time. Damn. I didn't do fun things like that. All right. You know who did do fun things, though?
Not Kendall.
No, the killer.
Oh, I thought he was going to be with someone new. Guess what?
You know what?
New girl.
Probably.
Okay. The killer's working on the butt now.
It took me a second to understand what you were getting at. And now
I'm the puzzle.
No. So let's check in on the walk-in freezer, right?
Right.
So there is a woman hanging in it now, and she's all bloody. And that's 100% what it looks like, by the way. And I think it's supposed to look like something else. But it doesn't. We'll talk about it later. It fully is like a woman,
yeah,
covered in blood.
Are you saying hanging. It's like supposed to look like a deer or something weird?
Oh, well, no.
Like, what is it supposed to look like?
Well, I'll get to it.
Okay.
Because I actually don't know if it's supposed to. It's a whole thing.
Okay.
We'll talk about it. Then we're going to cut to the puzzle where he goes ahead. He adds the legs now. He adds the legs to the puzzle. The next day, a girl named Susie plays tennis by herself out on the courts.
How?
She's just like hitting balls.
Okay.
And then like going and retrieving them and that kind of a vibe. Yeah. Some really loud, annoying music kicks on out of nowhere on the loudspeakers over the grounds. And Susie's like, nah, I'm good. So she leaves to go to the locker room and shower.
Mm.
A very breathy man enters the locker room, mm-hmm. a man who can only be the killer. Susie gets out of the shower, dries off, and starts to get dressed. But before she can put her shirt on, obviously, mm-hmm. we hear the sound of a revving chainsaw, and Susie hears it too. Looking up, she can see the killer in the room with her, and she tries to make a run for it. She runs through the locker room, but comes upon only locked doors. The only door she can find that opens leads to a dead-end bathroom containing a shower. So she runs into the shower stall and locks the door. But of course, the killer has a chainsaw, so he starts cutting straight through. Girlie pees her pants, by the way, and we get a close-up of that for some reason.
Okay.
Thank you. And the killer makes his way into the shower stall and slices the chainsaw right through Susie's stomach. Blood splatters the walls of the shower stall. Well, next we're going to cut to Willard. He's emerging from a building holding a duffel bag. But when he sees Kendall and Mary approaching, he puts the duffel bag back inside. Kendall wants to know what is up with this blaring music. And Willard says that they're probably just testing the system or something. Mary's like, all right, we need to call the dean and ask if they're testing it because something just doesn't feel right to her.
Mm-hmm.
So they ask Willard to use the phone in the janitor's room, but he's very insistent that no one is allowed in there. He tells them to, quote, wait over there, so they do, and Willard goes back inside and then comes out another door and meets them, quote, over there. He tells them to follow him to the control room, and Mary does, but Kendall's feeling sus of Willard, so he sneaks off to go in the door that Willard just came out of. Willard and Mary shut off the music, thank God, by the way, it was on this entire time, and they head back out. But now they realize that they've lost Kendall, and they start calling for him. He suddenly stumbles out of the building, out of sorts. Another one, he mumbles, in the locker room. Mary goes in to check and finds Susie's body sawed clean in half. The legs are missing.
Of course, right.
Right. She is distraught, and when she comes back out, Kendall is like, did you see it? Now, this is actually what might be the most iconic part of the film here, something that I could never do justice, nor would I want to. So Mary's line is as follows. While we were out here fumbling with that music, the lousy bastard was in there killing her. Bastard! Bastard!
Oh my God.
Bastard!
You know what it's giving?
What?
It's giving like the specifically the parody of What Do You Want?
Yes! Yes! It's exactly like that.
That's so funny.
But the even funnier part about it is that, remember, this movie was dubbed almost entirely. And the mic clips so bad.
Ooh.
Like, she is clipping the mic like crazy.
Oh, no.
And they don't care. It's so broken. And she's just screaming bastard over and over. It's wild. And that might be the most iconic.
I feel the that energy, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. I enjoy it.
So now the lieutenant is starting to get real tired of this. Some girl was just sawed in half alive, for God's sake. He checks in with the sergeant to see if he has gotten any leads. Sergeant's like, listen, I'm doing my best, but I gotta be thorough, and I've been up for 23 hours. I need help. I'm exhausted. Well, lieutenant has a great idea. Let's just ask that kid Kendall for help because he's obviously qualified and also definitely not a suspect.
Yeah.
So the sergeant even calls him out, saying it's ridiculous to use someone so involved, but the lieutenant defends him, saying he's definitely innocent, and also they need help, and who better than a well-informed college student?
Of course.
Desperate times, desperate measures, I guess. Now, cut to a pair of dangling bloody legs, and the killer is approaching them with the mother's black heels. Tries putting them on the feet, but oh no, they don't fit.
Oh man.
Shucks. Anyway, Professor Brown's leaving for the day, and Mary asks if she can walk with him for a bit.
Uh-oh.
She's a tad nervous about, you know, everything that's been going on lately.
Really? That's weird.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like everyone's just been completely fine being on their own this whole time.
It's just, everything's been fine. So to Professor Brown, he's understanding, a tad bit judgmental, saying that it's broad daylight. Surely nothing could happen to you in broad daylight. Like as if the one we just saw didn't happen in broad daylight, but it's fine. She says she's just seen quite a lot of horror lately, and he agrees. He's just used to dead bodies, given what he does, so he's a bit callous.
Okay.
Mary's like, so quite different from the dean, then. That guy's, you know, a big softy. Professor Brown shoots this down, saying that in order to run a campus like this, you have to be tough. He wouldn't bet on anyone's chances against the dean. Mary calls out that he sounds as though he's talking from some bitter experience, and then Professor Brown gets defensive, telling her she shouldn't pry into the personal lives of her colleagues, and then he storms off.
Oh.
Mind you, he doesn't know she's undercover. Just a random thing to remember. But Mary turns around and immediately bumps right into Kendall, who jump scares her. Kendall says he's going down to the station. His help has been requested. And Mary asks him where she might find the dean right about now. Well, the dean is in Arlington, but he should be back around 7 tonight. She could find him in his quarters then.
Why is the dean in Arlington?
He says something about he goes there on the first of every month.
That's suspicious.
Yeah. Like, what what are you doing? Okay. So I think we're going to time jump, I guess, a little here because we cut right to Mary going to the dean's quarters where she rings the bell. After a couple of rings, the dean comes to the door and invites her inside. She says she just has a couple questions, but it'd be silly to just stand here in the doorway and chat, so she agrees to go in. The dean invites her to a sitting room where he offers to make Mary some tea or coffee, and he heads into the kitchen just next door where he asks Mary, you know, how do you like it? She asks for cream, no sugar, a little saccharin, perhaps. He's like, watching your figure. Wouldn't think that's necessary with you playing all that tennis. Like
that's so
that.
Funny.
We definitely needed that. He's like, I'll put a little in for you. And he pulls out a brown bottle from the cupboard. He uses a dropper and puts drops of brown liquid into her coffee. And he's awful suspicious about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He brings the coffee out to her and asks what she wanted to talk to him about. Mary begins to sip the coffee and says she wanted to talk to him about Professor Brown. Does he have any sort of problems of any kind? She just needs any info she can get to solve this case. Girly finishes her coffee in about a minute and a half, and then the dean offers to get her another one, and she's like, sure, sounds great.
Oh my God.
Yeah. She's just like, done.
Damn.
While the dean's fixing up more coffee in the kitchen, Mary says that if they don't figure out something soon, they'll have to get a warrant and search the whole campus. The dean looks appalled at this and decides to add a little more drops to Mary's coffee, and he starts rambling about how bad a massive police presence would look for the school. Well, over at the station, Kendall's helping the sergeant go through the files on the staff. Kendall comes across a file that suggests someone on the staff has changed their name. The sergeant calls Arlington Records to get more information on someone by the name of John Reston. He seems to get some juicy tea, so when he hangs up the phone, of course, Kendall is like, so, what did they say? Oh, what the hell, you're practically on the force, he says.
For some reason.
Literally, like, okay. And then he just goes, the dean's the one. And there's like no fanfare to any of this, by the way. He's just like, yeah, the dean, yep, it's the dean.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, the whole reveal in this film is like they don't care about it, which like I understand because it doesn't seem like they ever cared about it.
yeah.
Quite frankly.
It does unfortunately match the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's like, the dean's the one. Apparently his mother was chopped up when he was a kid. Must have affected his mind.
Of course.
Kendall's like, oh no, Mary. She said she was going to see the dean. Holy mother of God, the sergeant says. That is literally what he says. And off they go to the dean's quarters. Now, over at the dean's quarters, Mary is starting to get a little woozy here. But remember, Mary had just asked, like, yo, you got any sus info on Professor Brown? Remember she asked
that?
Well, the dean comes back in and goes, well, you see, he's a homosexual.
That is really sus, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really sus, bro. I don't know what to do about
that. Is that it? That's the end of his, that's the end of it?
Well, no, then he's like, I found out about it a while ago, but as long as he doesn't break the rules, that's chill.
Okay,
good. And he's like, Brown, and then he goes, Brown seems more upset about his affliction than I am.
Does and he?
Like, I'm like, first of all, affliction is crazy. It just comes out of nowhere. You're like, oh.
Okay.
Are you just making this shit up? Like, what is this? And then, oh my God, oh, I forgot. And then out of nowhere, he goes, I think I should tell you, he almost tried to kill me. Pause. But I'm very strong, you know. That was the sentence.
He doesn't explain what that.
Nope. That's that.
He tried to kill him.
I like when she's like, did he have any problems? His first thought is, well, he's a homosexual. By the way. Oh, yeah.
Afterthought.
He also tried to kill me. Like, oh. Okay.
And so now what is she thinking? Is she passed out, basically?
Well.
She's still with it?
She's like, I feel funny. I can't seem to move right. And then the dean stands up and goes, that's the effect of the drug I gave you. She can still hear everything, but can't move, in quotes, because, like, she's still moving. It's
sure.
It's, you know. The dean then glances down at Mary's legs in those shoes. Could she be the right size? He takes out some tarp and lays it down beneath her legs before caressing them all weird-like.
Okay.
Some funky music kicks in as a lieutenant. Yeah, good time for some funky music, I guess. The lieutenant, the sergeant, and Kendall, obviously, arrive. The dean grabs his knife. The police ascend the stairs. The dean approaches Mary. The men make it to the door, and lieutenant's like, all right, kid, you'll make a great cop, but this is as far as you go. No, you can't do this to me now, Kendall says. All right, says the lieutenant. And he's like, you can come. So, like, all right, he's coming.
At this point, they might as well.
Literally, like, why are we bothering? So they approach the door. No response on the knock. So the lieutenant just, like, shoots the lock. They all pile in, making their way through the home. They find Mary on the couch, still unable to move, but the dean isn't anywhere to be seen. But Mary, she keeps eyeing the curtain that we can see is, like, swaying a little bit. And her glances, they're getting nowhere with these men, though. They are not taking the hint. What else is new?
Yeah, yeah.
The lieutenant asks Kendall to try walking Mary around. Like, why? Why are we doing that? But whatever. Okay. While he radios for an ambulance. Mm-hmm. Kendall gets Mary up and walking because that's how that works. And meanwhile, she's still staring at the curtain. Like, would someone look at the damn curtain? Mm-hmm. While Kendall's walking her around, the dean emerges from behind the curtain and lunges at Kendall.
Okay.
Like, well, yeah. Mary just has to watch from the ground, frozen. She was just walking, but now she can't move anymore. As Kendall and the dean, they have at it. And the dean pins Kendall to the ground, holding the knife over his head. It's not looking good. And just then, the lieutenant comes barging back in and shoots one bullet clean into the dean's forehead. Easy. He dead.
Cool.
Yeah, super easy kill right there. The twinkly end of an old horror movie music kicks in, and it's like, you all right, boy? The lieutenant asks Kendall. He nods, and then Mary, you know, she's going to be okay. She was drugged, but she'll be all right. She's already coming back, too.
Sure.
The sergeant finds one of the necky puzzles and shows it to Kendall, who goes, she's not bad, sergeant. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I'm upset.
Like, what? No, and it's also crazy because then they comment that the dean collecting something like this makes him a real freak. And it's like, well, yes, but you also just made that comment.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, are you going to be next?
Like, what's wrong with you? Yeah. So the sergeant, like, leans up against the bookcase where he got it from. But, oh, snap, it's a trap door.
What?
It spins around. Oh, my God, the freezer? Around. Actually, maybe. It spins around and hanging on the back of it is the human puzzle that the dean has been creating all along. different pieces from different women.
Uh-huh.
And the masterpiece is, of course, wearing his mother's clothing. Now, the puzzle woman falls forward, and of course, like, her dress, like, falls off as she's falling forward, and it falls right on top of Kendall.
Oh.
Who is immediately traumatized.
Good. I mean, oh.
No. No. I don't have sympathy for Kendall.
I'm seriously happy he's traumatized, because I was waiting for you to be like, he makes a joke, like,
I know.
What are we doing here?
Hey. You know. Yeah, I could. Yeah. Unfortunately, I could see it happening.
Yeah.
Now, sometime later, the dean's body is being carried out while Kendall sits pondering what just happened in a nearby armchair. Why he's still here, I don't know. The puzzle woman's body sits covered in a cloth on the floor as well, mm-hmm. and the sergeant checks in with Kendall and tells him it's time he gets some sleep. On the way out of the room, Kendall reaches for his jacket, which lays upon the table next to the puzzle body. As he's putting it on, an arm reaches out from beneath the sheets and grabs at Kendall's crotch.
Oh.
The hand digs its nails deep in there and drags down, blood emerging from Kendall's pants as he screams in pain. The credits roll.
What?
What?
The puzzle woman...
Yes.
Is a zombie now.
Yep. I mean, I guess so.
But she still doesn't have feet?
You know what's weird? I think... No, she does have... No, he already sewed on those legs. Before he checked the shoe size, he sewed the legs on.
The shoes just don't fit.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's funny how my...
There's a sequel.
I don't think there is.
Okay. I
don't believe there
is. I really don't. I think that's a perfect ending, and it doesn't need a sequel.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny that my script just immediately goes into, thank you guys so much for tuning in and hanging out. Can you imagine if I was like, all right, and bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Pieces. And it was a story that needed to be shared.
I agree.
It's not a movie that I love.
I do.
And definitely. Okay. Okay.
Because no, I didn't have to watch it.
You didn't have to watch it. And again, like, from what I hear, the production aspects of this were not great.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, behind the scenes stuff. But I don't know all the details. But it's like, wow, shocker, 80s horror film with creeps and weirdos. What else is new?
Who would have guessed? Shout out to those aerobics women who said,
yes,
we're going to dress in aerobics clothes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Because that was make sense, believe it or not. But yeah, I have three questions for you
right.
in Act 3. And are you prepared to survive?
I'm ready.
Okay. You've just finished an intense workout at school. Do you wait to shower at your home/dorm as opposed to in the locker room?
Yeah, 100%.
Really?
I would always, in tennis, we had like lockers and everything. Even after a tournament, I'm just going home and taking a shower. I would rather shower in my, I'm weird about my shower. I don't like showering other places. I have all my products. I like my water pressure. I don't like public things in general. Like, I'm going home and showering.
Exactly. And I literally not once, like I did cross country.
Yeah.
Not once did I use that shower.
Same.
And I was also the kid who was super uncomfortable changing in the locker room with like everyone just changing. Like I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I could go change in the stall, I would.
Mm-hmm.
Like most girls were chill. Like just like, oh, well, just all changing. I just couldn't do it.
Oh.
Like I was so, ugh. So like,
just so definitely not
like that. Yeah. So I said 92 because like,
oh my gosh, I feel like you should be at 100 too.
I'm leaving
because you never did and you never would.
I'm leaving it because it's college, and like, is a dorm shower any different than a locker room shower?
Oh.
Not really.
Wait, this is like a in the college gym though. College gym showers. Yeah. No.
The college gym is in my experience, dorm showers, like they were shared amongst the floor.
Yep.
So it's like, it's not that different. And at that point, I'd still prefer to wait, but.
I guess, but then comes down to the lazy factor. I wouldn't want to bring all my shower equipment to the gym when I can just walk the 5 minutes back to my dorm and
I mean, I agree.
You know? Yeah.
Ideally, no. Do you bring someone with you when going to question the dean?
Okay, so wait.
Mary.
She was suspicious?
She was suspicious of Professor Brown.
Right.
I think.
She was going to
Yeah.
Just going to talk to him about a different suspicion.
Yep.
So if she has zero suspicions, I didn't have any suspicions of the dean.
Mm. Yeah, they
I feel like I wouldn't IRL in this movie. Like,
I didn't. Because they really push like Willard, they push Professor Brown, they push everybody else on you.
I don't think I would have a problem going and seeing like my boss to talk to him about something. Like, I wouldn't need to feel the need to bring someone with me. So I'm going to go 10%.
Damn. Okay. Yeah. I said 68. And I think the only reason I'm even that high is because she was like very kind of skittish throughout the movie. Like, even with Professor Brown in the middle of the day, she asked him to walk with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. I feel like being on high alert here makes sense.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to say super high.
I guess I'm imagining, like, does she walk like alone on campus to his place, or does she like drive to his place?
I think she walks.
Okay, I'll bring it up to 20. Actually, that brings it up a lot for me, because I'm imagining like driving out to his house.
Oh, he lives on campus.
So he like is on campus. So it's like a walk alone on campus. That does change it. I would say that changes it a lot. I'm going to go like 75.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. Because the campus is obviously like the dangerous spot right now.
Yeah.
And then our final question, do you take the hint and look at the damn curtain?
I'm going to go 99.
I went 97.
Yeah.
Because she's literally, like, her eyes are wide and she just keeps looking at them and then looking, like, and yes. They're just like, are you okay?
I can imagine it perfectly.
I'm like, oh my God. Please. There's no way we're doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That brings my final act to a 91. Again.
91 again? Damn. I have an 86 for this act.
Okay. Yeah, my weighted score also comes out to a 91.
Damn, that's what we want to see, though. That's what this movie deserves, if we're being honest. Yeah. Mine is an 84.
Okay.
A little bit lower because my final was a little lower.
Yep.
So that brings our score for this episode to an 88%.
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like it's too low just because the movie is so ridiculous.
I know.
But at the same time, I think a 12% room for error is probably fair for a killer who's just going after people alone.
I'm also just fine with it being as low as 88, because you never know when Bruce Lee might come and karate chop your head off at any point.
It could happen, apparently. Like, I still can't believe that was a real scene in this movie.
I know.
You know what I do recommend, actually? Mm-hmm. You don't need to watch this, but you could watch the kill count on this. It was the first one I ever watched, and it just was very informative about the movie. And it'll show you all the weirdest parts of it. So,
okay, perfect. No, I actually will be watching that.
Great little moment.
I'm going to go make myself some lunch, and I'm going to watch that.
Oh, please do. And let me know how it goes, because I'll be very intrigued.
For sure.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in and hanging out with us this week. As always, please check us out over on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. There you can also find the links to our Patreon and Discord, where you too can fill out an interactable worksheet to get your own score. So let us know, would you survive?